What's up, OAUXers? Today we've got Anthony Gallo and Keith Rich on the podcast. Anthony is known as the engineer of Thing Company, and his love of knowing how things work under the hood comes from his early career as an IT systems administrator before he got bit by the development bug. Keith is principal experience designer at Think and works closely with Anthony to bridge the gap between design and development, a common theme here on the podcast. That's a lot of what we'll be talking about today. So Think Company helps their clients embark on large-scale digital transformations. They design and develop new products and services for these clients. They've got clients like Eventbrite, United Way, Johnson & Johnson, Comcast, and they've actually been using OUX for years now. A big hat tip to Karen Toledano for paving the way for OUX at Think Company. She wrote a couple of great articles. Many of you may have read those articles on OUX, and we'll link to her articles in the show notes. This conversation actually was instigated by another article on Think's great blog. They're doing a great job, doing a lot of amazing writing on their blog. This was an article that I saw posted on Twitter by Think Company, and I was very intrigued. I love the article. This article, it was by the director of technology, John Young at Think, and he wrote this piece called "What the Heck is a Full Stack Developer Anyhow?" And of course, that piqued my interest. One thing led to another, and before I know it, I am talking to Anthony and Keith about how design and development and OUX come together on their team, improving communication, collaboration, overall improving outcomes. We had so much fun in this conversation that, similar to many other episodes, it has spilled over into an OUX happy hour meetup. So that is coming up on Cinco de Mayo, May 5th at 6 p.m. Eastern time. And Anthony and Keith are going to show us how they use OUX and Airtable to wrangle content and data for their clients. So you can go to meetup.com/objectorientedUX. And if the event has not passed when you are listening to this, you're going to see that meetup at the top of the page. We'll also put the link in the show notes, the direct link that'll be there for you too. If you are listening to this in the future, hello, future person, go to oux.com/events and you'll be able to find the recording there. Okay, let's go talk to Anthony and Keith. Welcome to the Object Oriented UX Podcast, a podcast about tackling complexity head-on, gracefully organizing massive amounts of information, and designing scalable, future-proof, and of course, naturally intuitive object-oriented user experiences. An OUXer is a powerful blend of information architect, business analyst, facilitator, and UX strategist. If this sounds like you or what you aspire to, you are so in the right place. I'm Sophia Prater, UX designer, chief evangelist of Object-Oriented UX, and your host. Let's jump into it. Anthony Gallo and Keith Rich, welcome to the OUX podcast.
Thanks for having us. Excited to be here.
Yeah, very pumped. Thank you so much.
Awesome. I'm really excited to talk about all the work that you're doing at Think Company and how you're using OUX. But before we get into that, so y'all have both been at Think for a while, like 4 years plus, right? So I just want to get a little bit of your background, kind of how your career evolved and how you got to where you are today. So Anthony, you are a UX engineer. Keith, you are a UX designer through and through, and y'all work together a lot. So at Think, and I guess have for quite a few years. So I guess, Keith, let's start with you. Can you give us a little bit of your background and how you got to where you are now?
Yeah, well, I came to Philly after graduating from the University of Delaware without a job. So got a few little spots here and there, but eventually landed in pharmaceutical advertising. So that stayed there for 6 years. So it's been, you know, this month is now 10 years in the design industry. So 4 of those years being at Think Company. So came in as a you know, entry-level designer there, started to work my way up there and, you know, became senior designer and now principal experience designer. And there really I focus on the, you know, bridge between design and development. I have a little bit of front-end knowledge and I've coded my own website, for example. So that way I'm able to understand what goes into development, but from a design perspective. So that's really where I am at this point.
Wow. So pharmaceutical advertising, was that like, were you working at, like, was it digital advertising stuff? Like, what was your role there and how did you transition into design?
Yeah, that's a really great question because it took a while. It was definitely more of the ad campaigns and, you know, not necessarily going on the photo shoots, but there was all the consumer side, but also the healthcare professional side. And so I definitely found myself not so much into the ad campaigns, but more so into what those digital products were looking like. So I finally got around to designing one app there, you know, for iOS and Android. And then I got that, you know, the appetite for doing more product design. So it really shifted from advertising to strictly product design.
Very cool. Oh my gosh. Thinking about photo shoots for pharmaceutical advertising, I'm just thinking about like women in sundresses running through a field with a golden retriever. Like that's
lots of lifestyle basically. Photography.
And like the worst lifestyle and then the very best lifestyle. Exactly. And all you need is you need this pharmaceutical product to get you from point A to point B. Okay, awesome. That gives me a lot of really great context. So Anthony, what about you? What brought you to Think? And where were you before?
Yeah, I actually started working in technology in support, doing like IT support and systems engineering. And eventually I moved out of that into web development because it was a little more creative, a little less like under, like, you know, putting out fires all the time. I did that for advertising agencies for a little while and then made my way over to Think, which has been great. It's the approach to like engineering over here is like much more in line with what we're going to talk about later. And it's just been an awesome experience working with some really fantastic designers.
Very cool. So both of y'all came from had some advertising background. That's interesting.
There's a lot of it in Philly.
Yeah. And have y'all been working together for the last 4 years or is it more recently that you've started working together more closely?
So we tend to work, Think is very like project-based. So we'll tend to, based on which client we're working on, we'll like work together. We'll work together on some projects and then we'll be like going our own ways for a minute. And then like, we'll come back together working on another project. Like Keith was on the first project that I ever worked on at Think and we were working together on that. And then sort of like parted ways and then came together on another project for a different client.
And that's how it usually works at larger agencies. How many people is Think?
We're at about like 115 now. Yeah. Coming give or take.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I worked at an agency about that size. And I remember what that was like. It was kind of, it was always like, okay, we're on this project together and now we're not on a project for a few months. Cool. All right. So let's get into some object-oriented UX talking here. So we're here today because y'all are using a form of object-oriented UX in your work. You're finding success with it. But for those that might be coming into this podcast because they know and love one of you, but perhaps maybe have no idea what OUX is, can one of y'all give me a definition? Like, what does OUX mean to you? How do you define it? If somebody else in the street was asking, what is this OUX thing that you're doing? How would you explain it to them?
I think, a really interesting visual metaphor is, and that's really global, is thinking about going to eat somewhere. If you have your menu there, it's very easy to kind of pick out what you want to eat there. But imagine going to a restaurant and not having the menu, having to guess what the cuisine is, what, you know, what things are optional, what things are available for you. I think OOUX solves that problem of like, here's everything that you could really choose from. And then displaying that in categories in different ways that are, logical to someone who's going to be ordering that. So I find it as a nice, roadmap and a way to kind of really contextualize a lot of things that you would need to act on eventually when you're, or eat if you're at a restaurant, continuing that metaphor.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like if you went to a restaurant and you just had a list of all the verbs, you can eat, you can drink, you can talk to people. You can sit on a patio, you can sit on inside, you can sit at the bar. Those are all important things. It's important to be able to know that. But what you really want to know is you want to know what is the actual stuff that I'm coming to this restaurant for? Can I get desserts here? Can I get appetizers? Can I get entrees? What type of entrees do I have? And what are the attributes of those as well? Is there anything that's gluten-free? Is there anything that's vegan? And then also the What's that?
Spice level. That's very
yes,
important.
Spice level. Exactly. So you want to know the spice level for sure to be able to navigate that situation. And OU, I love that OUX helps kind of bring the stuff that you will actually be consuming forward, and then kind of the verbs can sit around that. Awesome. So how did y'all come across OUX? How did it all start? How did it get integrated into your work?
So I guess from like an engineering side, it's interesting because I hadn't worked with anyone doing OUX before I'd come to Think. And it was always like, you know, we would go into, I would work with designers, they deliver us a flat, and then we would start working from there to break things down and figure out how we're going to make this thing into a website. And kind of inverting all of that, the combination of the OUX approach to figuring out how our content's going to be displayed on a page, that combined with sort of an atomic approach to design kind of inverts that entire setup. Mm-hmm. And sort of we're starting from the smaller pieces, then building out to the larger ones. And that was sort of how I came into this, working specifically with like design systems to kind of solve these. So for more of the down the line kind of like implementation side, mm-hmm. as opposed to the like very beginning.
Right.
That's kind of where I got started with it.
Okay. So it started with this thinking at like thinking more in design systems. And you said you would have a designer bring you a flat.
Yeah, I think that's a term that I picked up from when I was working at agencies. But like, yeah, this like, it's a Photoshop file with like a website. We don't have any, there's no mobile designs here. We've got literally just an idea of what a website could be. Mm-hmm. And then we would try to like reverse engineer that into a full like living experience, because this is a picture. We need to turn this into something more alive. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so then thinking about it from a design system perspective, where does, for you, Anthony, where do design systems and object oriented UX, like how are they different or how do they work together?
So object oriented UX influences kind of how we'll build components in the design system and what components will make it into the design system, right? So when we're sitting down, like we have different projects that all start in different phases, but we'll go into, say we had like a greenfield project. We would look at, okay, this is kind of the problems we need to solve. What are the pieces here? And that's kind of where OUX would come in of like, you know, to kind of bring back that menu metaphor of like, what are the different things we can do here? What are the categories that those fit into and how can we map all that across? When we start getting into the design system phase, where then we now have all these things broken out, the different things the site needs to be able to do, and we can start building out, you know, smaller components that solve those goals. And then we can take those smaller components and build them into larger experiences. And so mm-hmm. that's kind of like we're building smaller to larger instead of larger to smaller.
Okay. Interesting. And Keith, how did OUX come on the radar for you?
Me? It was actually when I was back in the advertising world before I even really dived into product design, through a friend of mine, Andrew Lee. He basically sent me your article about the CNN election night. And so from there, I was just like, my mind was kind of expanded of like, oh yeah, you could actually take a step back and before you even design screens, really look at the content and the structure underlying that would help, you know, inform everything down the road. So really just reading that article first was kind of my first introduction to OUX. So shout out to you writing that on,
was that back in 2015? So yeah, did you read it like 2015, 2016?
I did. I had to read it four times, like to really understand it, because my whole mindset was in a different world at that point. Mm-hmm. So before moving into product design, I was really thinking about it, you know, in a different way. So that really, I think, was part of that transition for me from ad to UX.
Wow. You know, I love that you read it four times, that you saw the value and you were like, wait, I'm still not thinking like this. I need to read it again.
Right. Yeah. It's totally a different mindset shift. So once you get there, you're like, why would I ever do it, you know, differently, you know, instead of thinking about it from that very high level to, you know, detailed view there.
Right. Yeah. It's definitely hard to unsee it once you've seen it. Mm-hmm. Very cool. So we talked about this a little bit, but I just want to dig into some more details. Anthony and Keith, like what was, before you started using OUX or before you like your, like, actually let's start with you, Keith. So before you read that article, you're saying like, this was a huge mind shift for me. And then I couldn't really unsee it. I couldn't necessarily go back from that. Like, why would I ever do it the way that I was doing it before? What did that look like? What did it look like the way you were doing doing this kind of work before?
Yeah, it was very much waterfall. You know, we would kind of wait until we've gotten that document that has like all of the content in it. It was lots of content, lots of versions going back and forth amongst like content editors. And so eventually, yeah, it was kind of like, okay, now make sure this works in the design. It was very detached in that time before then. But yeah, I've noticed ever since shifting away from that and then also realizing how it integrates with design systems, like everything has to kind of fit in the modular system in order for it to build up and become a bigger thing. So definitely it's been, you know, something we've relied on a lot.
That's interesting that you said it was very waterfall before, and this has helped you kind of iterate and better, which is interesting because I hear one of the concerns with object-oriented UX is it feels like this very like it shines most when you're doing a holistic redesign. Like you can definitely owe a UX a page or a feature, but like when you're the more complexity you're dealing with and the kind of the bigger the scope is, the more important OA UX becomes, in my opinion, and the more valuable OA UX becomes. So a lot of folks feel like, how would this hit it? Like, how would you iterate with object-oriented UX, or how would this fit into maybe an agile process? Yeah, you're not. So like, well, I'm going to put a pin in that. We'll come back to that. But Anthony, I want to pop back to you. Like, what did before you started working this way, you said your designer would bring you a flat and then you would reverse engineer that. What were some of the issues with that? Like, why maybe did that not work as well?
A lot of times you'd run into all kinds of issues. You'd have such a big thing we would run into is that the design was built for like a very specific idea of what it would look like. People weren't necessarily worrying about what the content was going to be. So you'd have situations where you'd have like some sort of a card or something like that, that was expected to hold a certain amount of information. And then, oh no, the copy is like 10 lines longer than we thought it was going to be. Now what's this going to look like? We designed this piece that's going to go on this site over here, but actually like that's not really, it doesn't fit here in the whole user experience. It doesn't flow together. Like we're coming from an idea of what we think this final product will look like without actually taking into account what needs to be present.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. it seems kind of crazy, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, I worked this way for the first 5 years of my career for sure. It was definitely a major shift in thinking about the content and the data first. Doing that alongside my technical partners so that like we were all in lockstep on like what was the database gonna look like. And getting that database, kind of like a user-centered database, so that the user mental model was taken into consideration while building out the database, if database work was actually happening.
Yeah, and that's one of my favorite parts about this is that it helps get engineering in earlier in the conversation because we're talking about data. We're talking about how these different pieces sort of map together. And like for engineers, it's really good for us to be able to be in that conversation early because we kind of have that mental model of how we want these things to map together. And we can start working on it like from an engineering perspective and not from a way of like limiting design or UX to like, no, we can only do these things because this is what engineering lets us do. Like we try to avoid that as much as possible. We just want to be there early so that we know what sort of problem we need to tackle down the road. And we can all work collaboratively to get this stuff done.
Yeah. And it's just, I mean, I feel like the more when engineering is involved earlier from a design perspective, you're not designing silly, impossible things because your engineer's there. And then on the other side, I feel like in my experience that if engineering is involved early, when hard things do come up, like this object and this object have a relationship in the user's mental model. And the engineer, the technical architect might be like, oh, but those things actually don't talk together. Those are two different databases. There's absolutely no connection there. If as an engineer, if you saw those connections in a flat, right? Like you weren't informed, you weren't part of the process. And then all of a sudden the designer's like, hey, these two things need to talk to each other. As a human being, my reaction would be like, uh-uh, that can't happen. But if you're part of those conversations earlier on, I feel like I'm totally putting words in your mouth right now, but you are nodding your head. Like, I feel like if the more involved you are, the more possibilities come up. And it's like, well, maybe I understand why those two things need to talk to each other. And I was part of that conversation, figuring out that those two things need to talk to each other. And now I'm more in a solution, like come up with a solution mindset.
Yeah. And part of it is also, it's a timing thing. So when we're involved in the conversations earlier, we can start working on, like, if say we have multiple databases, like we have a very complex backend we're working with, if we need to start creating systems that can kind of tie those different things together, if we need to start architecting things in a way that we can make that data kind of work together, we can get ahead of that. And we can start doing that before we're doing, like, before it's like, oh, we need this app needs to be out the door in 6 months. It's like, well, we have to re-architect the entire backend. Like, if we can get ahead of that and maybe figure out some solutions, we can work with like database team or the backend development team to get those services stood up so that we can then kind of move more quickly and we can be ahead of those sort of problems.
It's a totally different way of iterating versus this kind of feature factory that so many folks are in, where you're iterating based on these kind of distinct user stories. And it's like, okay, designs are like a few days ahead and we're going to do some whiteboard sketches. And then those whiteboard sketches are going to go into development. But then that you get all this, like, this disconnection versus like, let's think about this architecture together. And then while the designers are going and we're working on screens or maybe testing those screens, the developers have figured out like, there needs to be a connection between teachers and students that like are not there in this ed tech app or something like that. We can go and be doing that hard work while maybe some more of the screen nuances are happening that like we're not necessarily as concerned about until we get to more front end. It's a totally different way of working.
Yeah. And I've tried to throw this term out at Think Company a lot. It's called Devign, D-E-V-I-G-N. Basically not separating design from dev. So there'll be times where we'll have those meetings and it's called usually design review, but they're Devign reviews. We're talking about design and dev all as one thing, you know, all in common.
Did you invent this?
I've seen it out there. Someone has the URL, but I've not seen it like used
as much
as I wanted to use it. Yeah.
What's it called when you put two words together like that? There's a word for that word.
There is a word. I don't know what the word is. We have to look it up, though.
Well, we'll have to look it up later. Yeah. But that is a really good one of those, because then it creates divine, which is like the angels come out and start singing. Like life is just better. It's such a good double entendre. I love that. Mm-hmm. Yes, OAUX helps you divine. That's so awesome. Okay. So give me the details. What does OAUX look like at Think now? And you can kind of focus on your part of the process. I know that some other folks more on the, like the BA side are doing a lot with the clients and kind of doing that initial work. What does it look like for y'all in your process?
Yeah, definitely. We have a fantastic group of content strategists, you know, past and present, who have worked with clients, definitely, you know, in partnership before when we were in physical spaces, definitely a lot of, you know, post-it notes and doing the object mapping and noun foraging. Now that has definitely moved into things like FigJam and Miro to kind of keep a record of that. And it's great to see that transition from there, you know, the planning and the workshopping part of it into things like Airtable and different databases. Then it allows you to, you know, make those relationships a little bit, you know, easier than you would with kind of moving the stickies around. So, and then take another level that can inform your end product, thinking about Airtable as a headless CMS, for example. All your data is structured in a way that has been, you know, basically taken from that noun foraging and Orca process into the database, which then powers, you know, the final input and presentation. So it definitely has been something that we've been experimenting with a lot, and the content strategists at Think Company have done a fantastic job working across disciplines to really realize, like, okay, as long as we have this in the beginning, it should make everything pretty seamless moving down from there.
Wow. So that are you leveraging Airtable to kind of prototype a headless CMS, or actually use it as a headless CMS?
So yeah, Airtable actually has like really powerful APIs that we've built applications that Airtable is the CMS.
Wow.
Like,
awesome.
Yeah. It's great. Amazing. Like, yeah, it's it's great because Airtable is something that like, it's not Excel, but it feels familiar for people that are used to working inside of that space. And so we can be like, here's the CMS. It looks like that. It looks like tables. And they can go, oh yeah, this makes a ton of sense to me. I can go in here. I can edit the data. Airtable lets us create all those relationships and we can pull that data straight out of there and use it to power our sites.
That's very cool. Very cool. So with Airtable, what I've run into is data validation. Like, do you use forms at all? Do you do a form view for maybe the client, or does the client just edit in a table view?
It's more internally. I would say internally. Like after that workshopping happens, we're kind of transcribing it into Airtable, and that way, it's kind of setting up the structures for what comes after.
Okay. Yeah, I've run into data validation. So like validating that a URL is a, like if somebody needs to put in like their Facebook URL, I can't validate that it's actually a correct URL, but maybe if it's not clients, if it's internal, setting that up internally, if that's not such a problem.
Yeah. I think in the situations that we've leveraged Airtable in that way, it's kind of like a little smaller scale. We don't need to do, we're not like dealing with like tons and tons and tons of data. Mm-hmm. I think that in situations like that, we then move to a more established CMS that can let us do all of those things and provide like a more robust interface.
Okay, cool. What CMS is your, other than if you need something more robust, what do y'all go with?
I feel like we end up using WordPress a lot, actually, even in a headless fashion. We do that. We've used Craft. It really, it depends, right? Our clients all have different needs and we want to work with them the best that we can to provide a product and like a solution that they're going to use and be comfortable with. For like small to medium sized things where we want to get maybe past something like Airtable, WordPress tends to work really well because people are really comfortable with it. It's a powerful content editor. People know what they're dealing with. With larger scale clients, we might use something like, I believe we've used Sitecore in the past. We've used Craft CMS. We've used, I'm blanking on any more.
Which one do you think is like the most, like what do you think an OAUXer would like the most? Which one feels the most? Because I know like WordPress is kind of hard, right? To like get things to talk to each, like get different WordPress things to talk to each other. And
you have to really think in WordPress ways to make your content models work in WordPress. And that can get a little difficult. So when you're dealing with a lot of complex objects, you kind of want to move past something like that to something a little more powerful. Like I said, it really depends on the client and what they're like. It's usually a lot of like, we'll have like legacy systems that we're working with. So we try and fit into that model, or we'll come up with a couple of propositions and we'll pass them along to them. And then whichever one kind of fits into their systems, their budget, all of that, and we'll make the decision based on those things. We try to work with the technologies our client needs the best we can.
Okay. All right. Cool. I was wondering if you had any like good recommendations for us, because like some CMSs feel very OAUX-y and some do not. Cool. Well, let me know if you think of it. If you're like, oh, this is one that Sophia should look at.
I would say like sanity.io is another one that I've heard great things about. And we're always experimenting at Think Company, not necessarily getting to the point of using it with a client, but I think we're always like keeping an eye on like, okay, what about Sanity? I feel like that could work for this one. I'm a designer, so I don't know the intricacy of it.
Cool. Yeah, I've heard of that one. So as far as like what the process looks like, that's super interesting to hear how it's manifesting. Anthony, do you have anything to add to that on what the process like looks like from an engineering perspective?
Yeah, it's actually in regards to our newly coined term, or perhaps previously coined term, divine. One of the coolest things I've ever seen was one of the projects that I worked on, and I believe Keith and I overlapped on this one, where we actually had design and engineering on the same like Scrum board. So tickets would start on the design side, work their way down. Everyone would be able to see what stage in the process it's at. And there's constant communication. Then once it goes through design review, it moves over into the dev column and we start working on it. But you know, the designer who originally built that is watching it the whole way through. So we can reach back to them, keep those conversations going. Once it goes into final review, we're now hitting it from a design and an engineering standpoint at the same time. And like that level of constant communication, everyone working on the same team is just, it's amazing. It was my favorite way to work.
Yeah, I know. It makes working any other way seem very sad. We've already been dancing around this, but let's get into some more details. So when you're designing and developing and you're working while holding hands and skipping through the field, what does that, how does OUX, like, give me some details, like how does OUX help with that communication and collaboration between design and development?
I think it really comes from, like, the biggest thing is it puts us all at the same starting point. We're all speaking the same language. We're all thinking the same way. Engineers, like, we think about a lot of these things from, like, we come at it from, like, a data standpoint. Like, this is the data we have. This is where it needs to go. This is where it needs to fit. And OUX kind of starts everyone having that conversation in the same place. So we all have the same mental model about how we want to work on this application. And just really, like, the fact that we're all now starting from that same point makes it so much easier for all of us to work together. It's just, yeah. And it's the way it informs everything, like we've said, with, like, you know, building into design systems, that sort of inverted method of building smaller pieces to larger pieces has just been, it's great.
And it's interesting, even though you're building smaller pieces to larger pieces, you still have that holistic view, right? Like, it's this bottom-up approach, but with this, like, almost like you still have that top-down perspective. You still have that big picture perspective. Keith, I want to pop back to you, but Anthony, have y'all used a lot of prioritization, or like when you're dividing up, like, okay, this is what we want to do, but what's going to get built first? And then what's going to get built second and third, and like figuring out what that order of operations, I mean, have you had any, has OUX helped with that at all? Like dividing up the complexity so that you can, so, you're not going to do everything at once, right? You still want to iterate and get something out there and then say, okay, now what's going to be phase 1.1? What's going to be phase 1.2?
Keith, do you have anything to add on that?
Yeah, because the vast amount of like types of projects we have, it kind of depends on like which project we're talking about really. If we're thinking about like design systems that we're building from scratch, I feel like, you know, at that point, we're really prioritizing what is the most foundational level. So like what is going to help us then, you know, build those other ones. So starting with the atoms, of course, if we're thinking about Brad Frost and the model of atomic design, really starting at that, like you wouldn't have a design system or try to build a experience without having colors, typography, and, you know, spacing already defined. So the same thing with OOUX, you wouldn't want to go into that same process without knowing anything about the objects and nested objects and attributes as well. Like you're going in blind at that point. So it's hard to really, I think, hit the ground running when you're designing experiences without that foundational level on both, you know, content and design sides, but eventually leading to the development.
Yeah. And I think it helps ensure that like, we don't run into a situation where we're building things that are solutions in search of a problem, right? Yeah. Like it makes sure that because like all of this is informed by the content and the data up front, like we're building things that are out there to serve a purpose and solve a problem instead of like, we've got this beautiful site. Now, what are these different pieces doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. No, that makes a lot of sense. So one thing that I've heard, and again, like, don't let me put words in your mouth here, or maybe you all haven't gotten too much. There's a whole round of the ORCA process all in prioritization. And what I've experienced, what I've heard other, especially developers voice before, is it's really nice to kind of see what's on the horizon. And even if that's not being built immediately, I can make decisions today on what I am building to make sure I'm not creating technical debt. And also UX debt for later on, because I'm building this solid foundation that now I can like, oh, we're not, this object isn't going to make it into phase one, but adding, I know that it needs to get added in. So I can kind of like make a place for that from a design and a development perspective. Like, has that kind of planning ever come in?
I was going to say, yeah, I feel like we usually start with that noun foraging, and because it's never like, a lot of times the dedicated teams have a lot more time to shape their projects and the process that they use. Whereas with project teams, where we have limited time and we're moving more and more, we kind of have to pick and pull like what pieces of ORCA that we want to use. Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, most importantly, it's definitely like figuring out and identifying those objects. But I think we definitely have some work to do with like the prioritization part of it. Because yeah, it's like, okay, now we have all the things, and we kind of hear from clients always, you know, where can I see it? You know, I want to see the thing. And so at that point, we're like, at least we have the objects, we know that. And then prioritization, I feel like, is clouded by, client needs at times.
Yeah, definitely. So actually, let's shift. And I would be happy to talk to y'all more about that another time, about like how to integrate that prioritization piece, because it can really help you say like, okay, this is what we're delivering immediately, and then what would make sense to come next. And I think it's just like, it's an easy, like rolling in a new object or upgrading an object, even better if you have an object, but it's very simple version of that object. And then later on upgrading that object to like add more attributes, add more calls to action on it. Like you can do more with this object. You can see more with this object. I feel like it's a much more elegant way to iterate and to phase a product than adding new features. And then, because when you just add these new features, you end up just trying to like kind of glom them together and you end up with a lot of kludge. You get the kludge factor continues to go up versus like this sort of elegant growth of, okay, we've got our main like juicy center objects. Like, okay, now we're going to add in the comment object or the review object. Or before, we actually didn't even have a user object because there was no authenticated version. And now we're going to enter the user object so you can have an authenticated version where users can now save things and like things and, you know, duplicate things and edit them or whatever they can do. I'd be happy to talk to y'all more about that, because it's pretty magical. It's a great way to design to like project plan, basically.
Yeah. There are situations where I've sort of done this kind of thing. A lot of times the prioritization ends up being wrapped up in which sort, like, let's say we're building, like, we have like a multi-page application, and like the first page we're going to deliver that the client, that like we've scheduled with the client, is going to be like the homepage, because that's the one they want to see first. Right. So a lot of times prioritization will fall into like, okay, we've built all of these, we have all of these things we need to build. Which ones are we going to be showing the client first? So let's pull those ones in first, build those, get that experience together. But at least because we've kind of come from it, like again, from that like OUX approach, at least we don't run into a situation where we have like multiple components trying to solve the same problem. Yeah. And we're like duplicating work in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is a huge thing to, I mean, I remember those days. And actually I work in a project now that's very similar. The prioritization has happened by page, which I don't think is the best way to prioritize. I think the best, it's like iterating on, you can iterate on page by page basis, or you can iterate on what I call fidelity, where we think about all the pages, but we think about them at a like kind of a, like, how do we do the simple version of all of them, but then make sure that they all kind of, or not even thinking about pages, thinking about objects and how they all fit together. Cool. So let's talk about, we need to get back to, we're running out of time here. We got to get back to Agile. So, and also, Agile / whatever you're like, you're dealing with all these clients that have their own processes that you're trying to fit into those processes. What kind of, have you gotten any pushback from OUX? Do you introduce your, like, well, I know you are introducing your clients to OUX here and there, but how does it work when you're thinking about if a client is a very agile client versus a very waterfall client versus like somewhere in between? How do you adjust OUX? How might OUX help with that? That's what I'm curious about right now.
What I'll end up doing is a lot, like we'll use OUX to kind of like push the client into more of like a research first sort of approach to things, to kind of think about these things upfront and let that inform things. And like whether they're sort of waterfall agile, some sort of hybrid blend where they're not really agile, we'll try and fit it in sort of that way of just getting those things out in front before we're designing features, to let that sort of be informed in that way. That's kind of where that'll fit into there. As far as from like OUX and an agile approach, because that's, it's a little more like, for me at least, it's kind of like where the rubber hits the road. There's probably a better metaphor for electrons, but and because they're done that way, because we've broken them down already, that slots into Agile really well, because, you know, we're doing sprints, we have small stories, we're pulling in bits of work at a time. It allows us to keep the scope small instead of like in the past, if it was like, and now we're building the settings page and now that's on the sprint. And it's like, well, we haven't broken this down into anything. Now we have to go back and break this down and be like, okay, hold on. We're not building the entire settings page in a week. We're going to break this down into our smaller pieces. We've already broken those down and we can pull those in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So interesting. So because the nature of OUX is breaking things down into their objects, that's already in also the, what are the CTA, all the Orca pieces. So we have objects, we got, what are the relate, we've broken even things mm-hmm. down to relationships. So you could even say like, okay, I'm building this relationship right now in this sprint, like those relationships are even broken down. The CTAs are broken down, the attributes are broken down. So then that just kind of, you already have it blocked up to be able to then break it down into a schedule of sprints.
Yeah. Yeah. And it fits right into user stories way more cleanly. We have all these things figured out already. We just pull them into, we put them in a story or a ticket or whatever your company happens to call them. Mm-hmm. And since, again, those smaller pieces are already broken down, we have these individualized stories that are very small that we can pull in and get them done instead of trying to break them down right when it's like, okay, build this whole experience. All right, well, how are we going to break this down? Like we've already done that work ahead of time.
And I think it just often it gets broken down by page. So there's a bunch of visual design done and then we break mm-hmm. it down by page. And then you end up with those repeated components because you've designed it page by page and then you're developing it page by page. And there's all sorts of problems that we've already kind of talked about that. Keith, anything to add to that on kind of how OUX might help you break down complexity or work in an agile environment?
Yeah, and I think we talked about a little bit before too, like that OOUX parallel with design systems. It's almost like the tools that help you get to that final solution. Thinking about like, it's not always kind of thought of as a product, design systems, that is. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with OOUX, it's not always considered from at least a client perspective as like a product or something that needs to be, incorporated into the sprints, I feel like. So a lot of times it ends up being kind of baked in. And I think that's a great thing that we do at Think Company between our devs and designers is to design in that way where it's like second nature. We're not even really thinking about how we're designing in that method. It just comes naturally. So a lot of times it's hard for us to kind of like pinpoint it and say like, oh yeah, we've used OOUX here because it's kind of like ingrained in that work. And we always jump to Airtable, of course, when we're in that planning phase and looking at the tables across, it's like, oh yeah, those are objects. And you said like thinking about those columns as the attributes for each of those, it just feels natural and kind of second nature there. And to the point where we're not even like bringing it to the client because it's like the way of working, you know, at that point.
This is just how we work. And yeah, I feel like a lot of folks feel like they need to ask for permission to start using it. It's like, you just start using it. Just start using it. And just say, this is the way that I work. This is the way that I solve problems. Are you going to dictate the way that I solve problems? Like that's a bigger problem right there. That's great to hear that it just feels like a natural and integrated part of design culture. I think that really warms my heart. Okay. So before we wrap up here, cause we're like running out of time, we already talked about this before that, like, if we wanted to, we could turn the tables. Do y'all have any questions for me? Anything that I can help you with?
We talk a lot about design systems. We do a lot of work with design systems. I'm curious, like, have you done that sort of work with like OOUX informing that sort of design system setup? Is that something that you've done work within?
Yeah. So I'm actually working on a project right now. I'm wrapping it up. I mean, it's a bit of an experiment with Big Medium. So with Josh Clark and Brad Frost was on that project as well, as kind of like, let's see how this works. Very complicated system that they are building out a directional design system for. And it was like, okay, Sophia, come on and do your thing. Build an object map of the current system. So not really thinking about what the system could be, just documenting the current system through an OOUX perspective and having a few suggestions there. But it seems to be working very, very well. It seems to be helping inform that work by a couple of things. So one, just really auditing the current system from that OOUX perspective, identifying where there are shapeshifters. To say, okay, well, we know we have a course object. We know we have a course object, but this course object in the current system manifests itself in three or four different ways. Now we can know what questions to ask the client. Say, why are they manifesting differently? Okay, no good reason. All right, great. We're just going to design the one then, which is very helpful. Also identifying masked objects to say like, okay, we actually right now, these two different things look exactly the same. What can we do here to make them in our design system, make that design system a specific design system so that we don't just have a pill component. We have a pill component for a course and we have a pill component for a project. And, you know, just as an example, and a course is bigger than a project. So we're going to give a little bit more vertical height to the course pill, even if it's like 20%. And we're going to give it like a little bit more of a shadow or something to like make it feel like a bigger thing. This is like very skeuomorphism 2.0. But like, how can we kind of use a bit of metaphor to show that these are two different things? There's a relationship between those things. And how can we visually show that and bake? It's literally baking that mental model into the design system. So we know now, because of OUX, the relationship between a project and a course. And we can now show that visually to reinforce that visually, not just with the navigation, not just with labeling, but actually with things like the vertical height of the pill. So going through and like and auditing it from that perspective, and then just having that object map so that they know when they know when they need to go and design that course card and that course detail page. And they need to know like all the little things that are going to be on there, that there's a course status and like these are the three values of the course status. And right now they're like red, yellow, and green. And I did a lot of screenshotting too, so that it was all kind of abstracted from them having to analyze, do so much analysis on the existing system. I'd already kind of componentized it for them. So this is still a work in progress. But yeah, it seems to be very, very beneficial for them.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it was fun.
Really amazing. Yeah, as you're explaining that, my mind goes to like design tokens. Obviously, there's like this package of decisions, you know, that end up having a semantic name. So, and the same thing for content could happen where it's like content tokens. It sounds like you're baking those in. You know, those decisions are just like maybe not labeled, but they're definitely there. So like, how can you then label those decisions the same way you would a design token? That'd be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. A big part of it, to be honest, was really just assessing the complexity of it and laying that out in an object map so we could see the complexity and then honing in. And the client really appreciated this too, honing in on those big problems that really kind of helped sell the design system even more. Like the design system was work was already sold, but it's like here exactly is where your design system is failing you, where you're creating four course components. You created one component, but you basically made it difficult to determine, am I looking at a course or a project, because your component isn't specific enough. And I'm all for that kind of inheritance. Like maybe you have a generic pill component, right? But then you have like the version, like this is what it looks like when a course is in that pill. And this is what it looks like when a project is in that pill. And they're going to look slightly different to help the, and they'll look slightly different everywhere they show up. They'll look different consistently, basically.
Yeah. And I love how like OUX can help you inform that design system in a way that it is actually a design system and not we put a bunch of components in a repo, build an experience out of them.
Exactly. It's more than a pattern library.
Exactly. Yes.
It has rules behind it. It's the design system, but then there's actually logic and rules with the design system of this is how you use the design system. This is how this card, right? Here's your generic version of a card. But depending on what you put in that card, there's going to be small design changes so that we want to make sure that like a course and a project don't look exactly the same. A student and a teacher don't look exactly the same because they are fundamentally different in the user's mental models. They shouldn't look the same.
Absolutely.
All right. So last question for you. Where would you like to see OUX in the future? Where do you kind of see this going? It still feels kind of fringy. Where do you see it going at Think within your company and kind of like within the larger industry?
Yeah, I think more and more we're seeing that like service design companies are asking about what does it mean to have the same experience in different channels? So whether that's in the store, you know, whether that's on the phone, over, you know, the website that they have, how can I make that experience the same for all of those? So yeah, I feel like OOVX can be done at a few different levels. It's like at the very highest level, you know, just the experience, but then with service design, you're thinking about the different channels. So how does that apply, you know, in the different context? So that's another interesting space for it to be explored, I feel like, and more companies are asking about trying to make a consistent experience across all of those.
Oh my gosh, I love that answer so much. I've been thinking about the same thing. And even, I mean, you can design from, if you have an object map, like everything can be informed by that. I mean, the app can be informed by that. The kiosk can be informed by that. The website can be informed by that. The voice UI Alexa skill could be informed by that, actually, because you're figuring out what the data is and you can start thinking, what questions will people ask? They're going to be asking questions about the objects, right? They're going to be asking to like add one object to another object. And you can start thinking what kind of commands might come out based on like that sort of foundational object map.
Yeah, the fact that we can sort of take that information, that map, and use it to inform every aspect of an experience. And like you're saying, an experience isn't just a website. An experience is all of these different things and physical spaces and like that sort of hybrid with like where you'd be interacting with kiosks or things like that. Like it can inform all these different things. And like, I feel like from at least like where Think is at, like we're going to continue to kind of bring these methodologies to clients and help them work with them and understand them better, because it can help inform all of their like systems and just work more cohesively and like much more smoothly.
I mean, I could even see it as a great from a sales perspective. Because if you build the object map for them and then you get that first website up, just saying like this object map can also inform this other platform or this other platform. And as you are the ones that have that intimate knowledge of the object map and literally have x-ray vision into their business, who are they going to come to when they want more work? They'll come back to you.
Yeah. It all dovetails very nicely into like, we've always been like very research first, like very like research driven, like let's design and build something with like some information behind it. Like, let's understand the problems we're trying to solve here. And this is just like a great tool to help inform all of that.
Yeah, I've been saying more and more that OAUX and specifically the Orca process is less of a tool for design and more of a tool for understanding. And I'm just thinking like, oh, and thinking, like it's a tool for thinking, thinking and understanding. And anybody that's trying to tell you to go design something before you fully understand it, you're just going to be fighting an uphill battle. The more understanding you can have before you design, the better. And this is just a tool for like understanding really complex stuff.
Yeah. And like, you're going to hit that complexity at some point in the project, no matter what. So it's best to like map all that stuff out in the beginning and understand what that complexity is, instead of you design something and then halfway through building it, you hit all of that complexity. Like you're not going to get around it. So it's best to understand it and let that inform all of your decisions moving forward.
Yeah. You mean you shouldn't just like sweep it under the rug and hope it goes away.
I mean, it wouldn't be my approach personally.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, says the engineer, of course. The engineer will find all that crap that you sort of underneath the rug and be like, what the hell? Or the user, or it just gets bubbled down to the user. And then the user has to deal with all that complexity because you didn't figure it out.
And yeah, that's what I love working about, you know, love about working with Think developers, because they will be in the very, you know, beginning of that stage and always thinking from that mindset of not just what's going to be coded, but what is the experience. And so I think it is a holistic, you know, from the very beginnings when it's research, but all the way till, okay, we're launching this thing. We feel pretty solid in that, you know, everything we've planned and everything we've designed and coded is all aligning to that spine of content and design that's consistent.
Amazing. Well, y'all have just 100% made my day. I'm going to be walking on clouds the rest of the day. I just love hearing how OUX is actually integrating into companies like Think and making your clients happy and making, I guess, like y'all happier too, right? It sounds like you're having a lot of fun.
It's cool. A blast.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having us. This was a ton of fun.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. I truly hope you enjoyed this episode. Please visit objectorientux.com/podcast for show notes. Our soundtrack is Fighter by Ruby Vell, courtesy of Sugaroo Records. Happy OUXing!